Okay, so the last two topics we did, I think, right? The one on the issue of Shemitah, as well as the one of davening Rechin and Bendoza, we focused on Bavli versus Yerushalmi. So I thought I would do one in this general overview a little bit on some of the differences that are found, not entirely, because obviously there's some overlap, and Bavli and Yerushalmi are not completely different. But on the other hand, many scholars have pointed out that there are certain things that you can point to in the Bavli versus the Yerushalmi where they really do have different approaches in general. One of the things we'll talk about a little bit later in the year, because I was requested to talk about this in Agadita, so I won't deal with it in depth right now, is Shadim, where one of the things that people have pointed out is that Shadim, the Bavli believes in Shadim and talks about Shadim a lot more than the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi does not seem to entertain them nearly as often, whether that means they don't believe in them in the same way or they just don't think they're essential or whatever it is. So there are differences like that between Bavli and Yerushalmi. Up to the point where even the Bavli recognizes this, where the Bavli... not in Shadim exactly, but in the issue of Zugot, on like superstitious issues in terms of worrying about twos, not doing things in pairs. The Bavli already tells us that in Bavel, they really worried about it, right? And they would try to never do anything in pairs because it was like bad luck and would encourage like all types of demonic forces and the like. And the Bavli said, however, Bimarava... in Eretz Yisrael, they don't worry about it. So there are certain differences, where I don't know if you would call that a universal difference, but definitely certain tendencies that are found between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi. But many scholars have pointed to more overarching differences in themes between the two shasas. And what I want to do is go through a few of them now with some examples and maybe go back to the examples that we saw the last 2 weeks and show how they fit into it. Again, many scholars have written on it. I've taken 5 examples from Yaffa Zilcha, since we've been using her for the last 2 weeks anyways. But other people have written on it. Jeffrey Rubenstein mentions it in some of his work and the like, okay? So I think I put 5. Yeah, I think I put 5 differences here that you often see between the Bavli and Yerushalmi, okay? So... these don't necessarily have to go in order, but let's, whatever, we can do these in order, but if there's one that jumps out at you and you want to do it first, that's fine. But, okay. The first thing she argues is that Yerushalmi tends to present stories in real time, right? It presents as if it's happening, where in the Bavli, it often seems to feel more removed. And that, she thinks, is because the Yerushalmi is less... overtly didactic, right? Remember, we saw this already last week where in Rechanina Mendoza, right, the Gemara takes a step back, right? In the Yerushalmi, it doesn't tell you what the lesson is, right? You're talking about how much Kavanah you're supposed to have in davening, and Toch Kedei, it tells you that Rechanina Mendoza didn't notice that he'd been bitten by this poisonous animal, and then there's the miracle that emerges from it, right? But the lesson has to be teased out. Right? It never says, and this is how much kavanah you should have, right? It's, this is what happened, right? Whereas the Bavli much more explicitly had statements like, this is what you're supposed to learn, right? This miracle happened to Hanina, but other people, right? Oi to the person who meets an arod, and oi to the arod who meets Rechanina Mendoza, right? There's like a, right? There's a lesson there. It starts to frame things. So she gives the following example. I took some which are very famous, so I think that's helpful. She took the example of Rabbi Akiva's death. Right, this is a story that you probably all have heard at some point in your life. Yes? Yes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. What? I mean, we do mention Yom Kippur Davening, but you know this, right? He was learning Torah, and he was captured for it, and they ripped off his skin with metal combs, right? I mean, this is not like a, yeah. This is not a surprise to anyone. No, different story. Yeah. That's a different story. With Rav Chanina ben Delza. Yeah, that's different story. Different one. Yes, good story also. I mean, good story. You know, famous story. Right? This is not a surprise, right? People know about this story. You've heard about the death of Rabbi Akiva. Okay, look at the difference. I've also given share on this in the past, so I like the story. Or I like teaching the story. I don't know if I like the story, right? But look at the difference, okay? First, just look at the length, okay? This is going to be her second one, which is that stories in the Bavli are longer than in the Yerushalmi, which, again, might be related to point one, where, right, there's a difference. If you're just telling a story, you tell the story and you move on. If you're taking the story and analyzing it, right, and trying to use it in very specific ways to teach very pointed lessons, suddenly get things longer, they get more explicit, right? But so you can just see already in terms of the length. So let's look at the Yerushalmi's version. The Yerushalmi says, Matnisan, Chayav Adam Levarech Al Hara'a, Kishem Shemavarech Al Atova Shenemar, Ahavtar Hashem Elokecha, B'chol Levavcha, B'chol Nafshecha, B'chol Maodecha. Right? That's the Mishnah that frames the discussion. That you're obligated to bless God, right? This is a Gemara from the end of Brachot. So we might return to this Agadata. I'm not sure. I spent a lot of time teaching this Agadata last year in the context of Kriyat Shema. I don't know how much we'll do it, but we'll at least touch on it now because we're doing Agadatot in Brachot. This is one you have to touch on. So the Mishnah says that you have to bless God for the good and the bad, just like you do for the good. And what's the proof? V'ahavta Hashem Elokecha, which, at least in the Bavli, is right, whether right, b'midah shata modeh, right, what he gives you in measures, whether it's good or whether it's bad, okay? So that leads into the story of Rabbi Kiva. Rabbi Kiva, v'kayim mitodon kumei turnus rofus harasha. Rabbi Akiva is being judged in front of Rabbi Akiva. Rachdach antod kriyat shema. The time of kriyat shema came. Shari kari kriyat shema. So what did he do? He started saying shema. Shama v'gochach. Turnus rofus laughed at him. Amar le saba said, old man. Icheireshat, either you're deaf. Right? Meaning you don't feel the pain. You don't even process what's going on. Or you are someone who scorns suffering, meaning you're able to kick suffering away. You don't, right? Amar le tipach ruche dahu gavra. Let his bones rot. Lo charish ana v'lo mavet b'isurin ana. Neither are true. Elakol yom ikariti pasuk zev ayiti mitzta'er va'omer emata yavosh shloshtan liyadi. My whole life, I've been waiting for this to come to me. V'avta Hashem Elokecha, v'chol levavcha, v'chol nafshecha, v'chol meodecha. Rachamti v'chol libi, rachamti v'chol mamoni. I love God with my heart, I love God with all my money, u'v'chol nafshi, lo'avei badikli, but he never tested me. If whether I was willing to give him my life, V'egiyazman kriyashman, the time of kriyashma came, v'lo aflog, v'lo afloga daiti. Right? V'fum kain, ani kare v'gochech, lo hispek lomar shaparcha nishmata. Okay? So, in the meantime, he's saying kriyashman, he's laughing, and he didn't finish, he didn't manage to get through it until his soul flew away. Okay? Let's read the Bavli, and then let's compare and contrast, see what we get, okay? Here's the version of the Bavli. Tanya, Rabbi Eliezer Omer, Im nemar b'chol nafshecha, lama nemar b'chol meodecha. If you say that you have to give up your life, so why do you have to say you give up your money? Vim nemar b'chol meodecha, and if we say you have to give up your money, lama nemar b'chol nafshecha, ela yesh l'cha adam shechaviv alav mamono, l'kach nemar b'chol nafshecha. If there's someone who loves his money, his life more than his money, so we say b'chol nafshecha, because you have to give up that which is more valuable to you. And if there's somebody whose money is worth more to him than his life, so we say give up your money. Rabbi Kiva says b'chol nafshecha, feel no tell nafshecha, your life, even if he takes your life. Tanu rabbanan, pam achad gazra malchut harisha shlo yasku to Yisrael b'torah. There was once a story that the Romans forbade the Jews from learning Torah. But Papus ben Yehuda Matzul Rabbi Akiva Shaya Mikal Kelot Birabim Vosek B'Torah. And Papus ben Yehuda found Rabbi Akiva learning Torah publicly anyways. Amar Le Akiva! He said, Akiva Yetamit Yarim Ibn Malchut, are you not afraid of the king? Amar Lo, Emshalach HaMashal, let me tell you a story, let me tell you a parable. L'ma Dover Domeh, L'shu'al Shem HaLech HaGavei HaNahar. It's like a fox who's walking by the river. And he saw fish that were swimming around. Who are you running away from? We're running away from the nets, right? The fisher's nets. Why don't you come and live with me on land? And we will live together in peace and harmony, fish and foxes, or like our ancestors used to. Amru lo, and they said to them, you are the person, you're the animal, they say, is the wisest of creatures. Lo pikech ata, you're not smart, el tipesh ata, you're an idiot. If in the place of our life, we are afraid, where we would definitely die, how much more scared should we be? So now we're learning Torah, which is said about it that it is your days and life. And we're scared. If we stopped learning, how much more scared would we be? Amru, and then they say, it wasn't long until he was put in prison. And they also imprisoned Papus. Amru lo Papus, mi hevi achalakan. They said, so he said to him, Papus, how'd you get here? Who brought you? Amr lo ashrechar bi Akiva shenitbast al divrei Torah. Oilo lo papa shenitbast al dvarmatela. Lucky are you, Rabbi Akiva, that you were in prison because of Torah. I was in prison for stupid things. Vishah shod siwit Rabbi Akiva la hariga. When they took it, Rabbi Akiva's man kriyat shmaya, it was time for shma. Vayusarkin bisaro bimasre kochel barzel, and they were scraping his flesh with metal combs. Vayimikabel alav omal chuchamayim, and he was accepting the yoke of heaven. Amr lo talmidav rabbeinu. His student said to him, Ad Khan, even to this point, you accept God. Amr Lahem, Kol Yamai, Aiti Mitztayer al Posuk Zeh, Bechol Nafshecha, Afilu Notel et Nafshecha. My whole life, I've been worried about this Pasuk. My whole life, Afilu Notel et Nafshecha, and Shmatcha, even if he takes your life, Amarti Matai Yavol Yodi Vakamenu, and I said, when will I be able to fulfill it? Va'achshav Shebel Yodi Lo Akaimenu, and now I won't fulfill it? Hayumarich V'echad, right, obviously, Echad, right, a dollar, right, otherwise, you can't do Echad, that's not the word. Echad, right, soft dollar is something more like a the. Ache Yatzita Nishmato Be'echad, until he died with his mouth saying the word one. Yatzida batkal v'amra, a voice came out from heaven and said, Ashrecha Rabbi Akiva, praiseworthy of you, Rabbi Akiva, you're lucky, sheyatzid nishmatcha v'echad, that your soul left your body with the word one. Amru malachei ashare levnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Even the angels were upset and they said, Zu Torah v'zuschara, this is Torah and this is its reward. He said, don't worry, he has a portion of the world to come. Lucky are you, Rabbi Akiva, that you're coming to Olam Haba. Okay, so, right? So, what differences do you note between these stories? Yeah, right. So she says, first of all, right, as she says, right off the bat, what you see, Yerushalmi presents stories in real time, right? This is what happened. That's it. What does the Bavli do? There was a theological background, and there was a discussion before, and Papua said, why do you learn Torah? Aren't you afraid? And he gave him a mushel, and he said, well, we're like fish in water, and fish out of water, and Torah is our life, and da-da-da-da, and a whole spiel. And then he ends up magically in prison with the same person who critiqued him, and they have a conversation. And he says, well, you, we're both gonna die, but at least you're gonna die, Al Shem Shamayim, because you were arrested for learning Torah. And I got arrested for Narishkeit, so I wasn't even arrested for a good reason. Right? Like, the whole story is couched in, like, halachic back and forth and theological back and forth and debates and mushels and, right?
Also the students saying instead of...
Right, and the students and the angels, yeah. Right? This is, like, in the Yerushalmi, does it address the question of theodicy, of God's fairness and justice? No, I mean, like, it's unfair. Okay, deal with it. Like, I don't know. The Bavli, it, like, the students think it's unfair. The angels think it's unfair, right?
It doesn't even mention the turn of Rufus at all.
Right? It's like, right?
That part doesn't matter.
It's right, turn of Rufus. I mean, he happened to be the one. Okay, I mean, fine, the Romans, and who cares, right? In the Bavli, right? So this is her first point, is that the difference between Bavli and Yerushalmi, it's like, again, is it always true? No. But she says there's a tendency that the Bavli will take a story and it will add layer upon layer of explicit didactic discussion. They're telling you what they want you to pull out of the story, right? They want you to think about theodicy. They want you to think about, right? They want to tell you, they want you to understand about Torah, right? Right. You know, around Gush, there's always a famous story that they once asked Rav Aharon. We do like these question answers in Gush, just like we do here, but they're much bigger there because they're like planned in advance by a long time and whatever. It's a bigger place and Rav Aharon was scarier and whatever, you know. But someone once had asked him and he said, Rebbe, why do we learn? Right? And famously, he just couldn't help himself. And Rav Aharon yelled at him, why do we learn? Why do we breathe? Right? And that was it. Right? Like, that's the point of this whole, right? It says, this whole mashal, you're fish out of water. Right? You don't have a choice. You don't have a choice. Right? Torah is your life. Right? So this is her, right, is her first point, is that the Bavli is just so much more didactic, right? Explicitly didactic in a way that the Yerushalmi just isn't. Okay? Now there are obviously other points. Now if you want, we can just take a few minutes on this Agadata, since again it is one in Brachot, which is, you know, our Masechta. So let's take a minute. Besides for the overarching Bavli Yerushalmi things, what are the things do you notice about this? Right? What else do you see as a difference between the way that it's presented in these stories? What? No, there's no other differences. Like, that's it. We've exhausted the differences. What? Yes. Would you like me to pause it? What? That I think is definitely right. The Yerushalmi is more open ended. Right. That's her point. Right. That the Bavli is much more explicitly didactic. Right. It tells you the lessons it wants you to know. The Yerushalmi tells you the story.
The second one is asking the questions back and forth about the whole Medaka and the whole before going into the actual.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And look, right there, one of the things that, you know, we'll notice, and this is something that many people, I don't actually think I put it as one of the differences. One of the things that people point out, this is something that Rubenstein is a fan of, is that many stories in the Bavli take place in the Beit Midrash when they don't in the Yerushalmi. Now, neither of these take place fully in the Beit Midrash, but the Beit Midrash does become much more important in the version in the Bavli.
It's like the Beit Midrash moved here for the story.
Correct, right? Meaning here, exactly, right? It's a little bit different here, where like it's not actually in the Beit Midrash, but there is Talmidim, and there's actually like a Gemara discussion, right, with students, right, and like the background for it is not just like Torah. It's he learned a public, right? He taught publicly for this purpose, right?
Also, is there a reason that the Bavli records this conversation in Aramaic, like this most likely not what he's
spoken about. Oh, I mean, that usually means it means it's more talking about it rather than, you know, actually recording an actual conversation, right? And it's not the way they spoke, right? It's, right, so that's true, right, in terms of language. Now, there are some local examples. Rabbi Lam's example that he likes here is the difference of why Rabbi Kiva says Shema. Right? This is just one of Rabbi Lam's big things on this Agadata, is the difference of why they say Shema. What's the difference? Do you catch it? It's a subtle point, but Rabbi Lam was a big fan of this one. In his book, he has a whole book on Dress on Kriyat Shema. We spent a lot of time on it last year. Right?
If he doesn't understand the Nafshatel part, other than he doesn't know he's actually going to get to say it.
Nope. So according to the Bavli, why are they saying Shema? Yes.
It's just some missing ID cards.
Sure. Okay. Who's this for?
Give it to Yudi or to Rabbi Wasserman.
Okay, fine. No problem. Someone give it to them just in case for some reason I don't make it here on Sunday. So I'll give it to Rashi.
Who is this?
What? AIM.
What?
AIM. ID cards. Oh. I'll give it to Moshe. Give it to Moshe. What?
Okay.
It's a bunch of them. Okay, I'll give it to Marco. So, one of his favorite differences in this story is why does Rabbi Kiva say Shema in the story? Both. Ah, so very good. Moshe says, well, in which story? With Bavli or Yerushalmi? Or both? Be careful. Why is he saying Shema in the Yerushalmi and the Bavli? It's a very sharp read by Rabbi Lam. Thank you. In which one? No. The Bavli. B'shah shotzi Rabbi Kiva la'ariga zman kriyat Shema haya. Right? According to the Bavli, why is he saying Shema? Because it's time for Shacharis. That's why. He's saying it despite what's going on. Not because of what's going on. It happens to work. But he's saying Shema despite what's going on.
It's not part of the lesson.
Well, it might be part of the lesson, but he's not saying Shema to make a point. Dafka, everything else is making a point. But he's not saying Shema to make a point. He's saying Shema because it is Zman Kriyat Shema. In the Yerushalmi, why is he saying Shema? As a statement. Right? Meaning, both in the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, he talks about giving up his life and that being part of his focus. But in the Bavli, he only happens to say those words because it's Shacharis time. Right? And once he's saying it, oh, well, that's great. In the Yerushalmi, that's the point. He says it on purpose. Right? It could be 3 in the afternoon, but he says it because it's a statement of faith. Now, why is that important? Because as Rabbi Lam details extensively, there are huge machlokot in the Rishonim and Achronim. To what extent are we supposed to celebrate rather than just tolerate or deal with or live up to our expectations of martyrdom?
What?
Martyrdom. Giving up our lives if we need to for God. Right? Mm-hmm. Right? In both of them, right, obviously Rabbi Kiva is willing to do it. Right? But the question is, did he really, what was he like, waiting to do it? So if he says Shema because it happens to be Sof Zman Kriyat Shema, it happens to be Zman Kriyat Shema, so yes, he's making a statement that I'm willing to give up my life, but that it's not like he's declaring Kriyat Shema because I was just, right? I want to make a point, I'm giving it up. Correct. In both of them, obviously, the fact that he said Shema every day highlights the fact that he, right, this is something he thinks about. Now, it might actually be Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik's point this out, not Rav Chaim, but Rabbi Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, that this girsa might not actually be there in the Bavli of Matai Yavoli Yadai Ve'Kaimena. Like, when will it come to me? That girsa seems to have been added in the time of the Rishonim during the Crusades when people really, really loved martyrdom because the Baal HaTosfot were obsessed with martyrdom for like a few generations and then it faded. There was like a few generations where they were totally crazy about martyrdom in very disturbing ways, not like, you know, because they didn't just martyr themselves. They martyred their kids, and they would shech them in the Aron, and they would say a bracha on Shechitat Karbanot while shechting their kids in the Aron and sprinkling their blood on the Aron. I mean, I kid you not. Like, we have chronicles, so this is what people did. Like,
how, if you see, it says that he says Shema, and then it's me to ask him, like, whatever. And then it says that he finished saying Shema as he died.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how this works out. He's saying Shema. It's very unclear, right? Meaning, well, maybe, or this is didactic, right? Meaning, that's like, right? The Gemara is adding levels, and like when it happens is not the point.
But it sounds like
right?
What the Rosh saying is that it happened to be that he died while saying.
Yeah, right. Could be, right? Could be. But this is one of Ray Lamb's points, right? Is that the question of whether he's like going out of his way to say Shema, right? To like make a point. Rather than he happened to be davening, right? Like, is the point here that he, I mean, I'll just read it to you quickly in Rabbi Lamb, one second. Right, so he says, in both the Babylonian and the more elaborate Jerusalem versions of this event, Rabbi Akiva interprets with all your souls implying martyrdom, but a number of differences between them. Two literary and one more substance deserve mention. In the account of the Bavli, Rabbi Akiva relates his drasha to his disciples. In contrast to the Palestinian version, he directs his comments to the enemy himself, indicating a readiness open to challenge and taunt his tormentor. Similarly, the Babylonian Talmud makes no mention of Rabbi Akiva smiling or laughing. When in the Jerusalem Talmud, the smile is significant. The smile seems to be of a double nature, part pleasure performing a mitzvah, that of Kiddush Hashem, martyrdom, even if he takes your soul, part smirk and contempt for the tyrant. A further and more important difference. The Babylonian version highlights the time for reading the Shema as the essential element of the tale. It focuses on the biblical proof text as the source for requiring such an act of martyrdom. Note the wording of the text. When the Romans took Rabbi Akiva to execute him, it was time for the reading of Shema. The rabbis here reinforced the idea of Rabbi Akiva's invocation of the phrase with all your soul upon, and his death upon reciting Echad teaches not only that his martyrdom coincided with the reading of Shema, but that martyrdom itself is an aspect of reading the Shema. As Rabbi Akiva taught all his life and ultimately with his death. In the Jerusalem Talmud's version, the reading of the Shema, though important, is not quite central to the dramatic tension of the story. When his time for reading the Shema arrives fortuitously, as Rabbi Akiva is being interrogated and tortured by Rufus, Rabbi Akiva uses this very moment to flaunt a sardonic smile and heroically defy the tyrant. But Rabbi Akiva's death was primarily a fulfillment not of the mitzvah of reading Shema, but that of accepting martyrdom. Right? And that, I don't know if I agree with him 100%, but I do think he's right, that in the Bavli, right, in the Bavli, the reason he's saying Shema is because it's time for Shema. In the Yerushalmi, the point, the drama is taunting his tormentor, right? He is relishing in martyring himself and making fun of Turnus Rufus in the process, and he says Shema as part of that, right? Now, for a lamb, he goes farther, and he says that what this tells you is martyrdom itself part of the mitzvah of Shema? It implies in the Bavli that it is, because these two things seem to come together as obligations rather than... Okay. And then he notes that perhaps the differences between them is as follows, right? In concentrating primarily on Rabbi Akiva's martyrdom as a fulfillment of his drasha on with all your soul verse of the Shema, the Babylonian Talmud implies the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem is achieved at the moment one is ready to die for God's sake, even if one does not actually suffer martyrdom, right? This is a very interesting other diuk, which is what? According to Rabbi Akiva, how does he understand it? Every day at Shema, he tested himself. Am I ready to give up, to fulfill b'chol levavcha? Yes. B'chol ma'odecha? Yes. B'chol nafshecha? I don't know, right? And now I know. But what does that mean? That according to Bavli, part of the lesson here is that the sheer of how much you're supposed to love God when you say Shema every day is, am I ready to martyr him right now, right? This story isn't just about teaching you martyrdom. It's about teaching you how committed you have to feel every time you say those words in Shema, right? It's a lesson about the way you experience Shema, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, where, right, it's not. And Roy Lam takes this as more to whether you really celebrate martyrdom itself, right? In the Bavli, he argues they're not celebrating martyrdom itself. They're celebrating the willingness to martyr yourself, right? But not martyrdom itself. Because what's it saying? Every time you say Shema, you should feel the experience of loving God that you would be willing to martyr yourself. But it's not about martyrdom per se, as opposed to the Yerushalmi, where the whole story is just about him teasing his tormentor. Okay, so those are some other differences between them. But for our main point today, the difference between Bavli and the Yerushalmi, besides the lens, is, as I said, the Yerushalmi takes place in real time, right? The Bavli constructs it in a much more didactic way. Whether it's, as Ezra Lam says, to teach by the nature of Kriyat Shema and to teach lessons to a Talmidim, which, as Josh notes, he can't really be doing because he's dying in the process, right? But it is more explicitly didactic. Okay, that's one. Oh, God. Let's see if we can get through all five. Okay? Fine. I'll skip for a second to three, right? Because this is very easy and you see it in this story as well. Part of this is that time is presented in the present rather than in the past, right? Yeah, right? The Yerushalmi tends to tell stories more in the present tense, right? Like, it wants you to experience stories rather than, and this relates to the first point, which is, if the main point of telestorying is to experience it, you have to be, then you say it in the present tense and you're less didactic about it, right? If you want to teach lessons, so what do? This story happened, and this is what you should learn from it. Right? Okay. Lesson four, right? Again, this is related to it, is that, right? There are specific halachic and ethical takeaways to the Bavli, right? These are all related points, right? But, right, so all these points really come together for the Bavli. The Yerushalmi, the main point of telling stories is for you to experience them, be inspired by them, right? Live them. In the Bavli, we talk about them in the past tense because they're tools and a didactic thing. So we spell them out. We make the lessons clear. We make the takeaway clear at the end, right? All of those patterns, right, point to this fundamental difference between how the Bavli and the Yerushalmi tell stories, okay? That's three differences. She has two others, okay? As we've already noted and we've seen in the Rabbi Kiva story, Bavli tends to be much longer, Yerushalmi much shorter. Now, you could have just said, well, the Yerushalmi likes writing less. We know that's true even in Halacha, right? Where the Bavli will spell itself out, and Yerushalmi, as you guys know, we chop letters and words, and we try to break our heads over what exactly. There are no questions. There's no Amars. Like, certain words, like, really? You were skimping so much in ink, you couldn't say Amar, right? You just, like, right? Okay, we know that the Yerushalmi is shorter. But she actually thinks that this integrates into the point we just made. Which is that, again, she thinks this comes to the same point. Why would a story be shorter rather than longer?
They're just telling you a story.
Because we're telling you a story, and we want you to be impressed by the person. We want you to experience the story for a little, you know, be inspired by it and move on, right? The Bavli's way of having inspiring is through analysis, right? So then the story has to become more explicit and detailed with theological, right? Right, all these for her, right, connect. Right, and here she proves this from. Or she notes that Rav Kook says this in number two here from Igrot Ariya. He says, "Kishlomdim harbe nistar, as kol mashmivinim lomdim me'anigle me'ir b'or yikarot." The more nistar you learn, the more it enlightens your nigle. Right, umit galeh ufara nistar v'skulata. Right, nigle is more like the revealed Torah. Nistar, like Kabbalah and the like. Skulatal kolinim usagim shabanigla. The Zoe Shitar Yerushalmi. And now he says, this is the difference between the Yerushalmi. Shemitoch shechasidim hayutaratam mitbarechet velo rak kedivrei Bavli. Right? He said, the Yerushalmi just tells you the stories because their Torah, their lives was blessed. Right? And not just the Bavli Shatar Shami Shtamer. The nearest Yerushalmi Osik Bechasidim Yoter El Yonim. Shatar Mitgadel Mitar Etzlam. He was dealing with great people, that the Torah just became great with them and became glorified. Ideho Fa'ad HaSagot HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mimara Kamut L'Nechalim Gdolim Ve'itanim. Right? Like, it was the, like, God's expression just expressed, right? His presence just expressed itself through him. Like, that's the Yerushalmi. Like, look at these great people and how God just speaks through them and they live godly lives. That's what he wants you to see. Umasigim or Rashal Torah Gami de Tfila. And they perceive the light of Torah through prayer. Itbanut Sheba, Vishakodim Shachala, Sheheimim Gufi Torish Madashal Torah. Uvazel Yesh Hevdel Ben Avir de Israel, there it's Israel. And for Rav Kook, there's a difference between Israel and Chutz Laretz. Because in Eretz Yisrael, she'echola ruach ha-kodesh la'ashpia gam al pilchan halachot. In Eretz Yisrael, the ruach ha-kodesh just infuses the very actions that you do. U'v'chutz la'aretz ruach ha-kodesh b'gilui b'gilui rak al ha-agadot v'alachot nidon al pi seichel anoshi. In Chutz Laretz, it doesn't infuse like the regular actions. Like, you need to analyze it. You need to infuse it with Torah and with halacha. Right, and then right, that's why the Bavel is talked about as darkness in the Gemara and Eretz Yisrael is light. Right, so Rav Kook has this like mystical idea that the reason this is true is because the reason, and this is why it's shorter and not didactic, is that in Eretz Yisrael, God's presence is just felt. Again, this is a very Rav Kook idea, right? I'm sure if, for those of you who go to Reis Klaras, this sounds on point for Rav Kook, right? It does. And for him, the Bavli, right, life just isn't experienced that way. So the way you get God into it is through analysis. And okay, fine. The last difference that I want to put is the following: the role of Eretz Yisrael is very different, right? And we've seen this a little bit 2 weeks ago in the Shemitah one. We're in the right. Remember, in the Shemitah ones, in the Bavli, the point is more like general worldviews and things like that. And the Yerushalmi, this really is about Shemitah, right? Because, like, they're experiencing it. So, like, the lesson you have to learn is about Shemitah because, you know, you have to know about Shemitah. In general, Israel is much more central. And what she doesn't spell as much out here, but I mentioned already from Rubenstein, is that what's the equivalent in the Bavli? The Beit Midrash, right? So this becomes very clear in the two versions of the Choni HaMagel story. I told you I would get to this, Josh, right? Okay, so this is the Rip Van Winkle Jewish story, right? Choni HaMe'agel sleeps for 70 years. I want to show you quickly the similarities and differences between the stories, okay? So here's the version in the Yerushalmi. Amar Rav Yudan. Orem Rav Yudan Giora. Hadin Choni HaMe'agel. There was this person, Choni HaMe'agel. Barbrei de Choni HaMe'agel, who was the grandson of the other Choni HaMe'agel. I don't want to get into both of them yet. Ave Samech. L'churban Beit Mukdisha. And he lived near the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And this is the story that's told about him. Nifak Litura Degabe Pa'ala. He went to the mountains to watch his workers. Du Taman Nachat Mitra. When he got there, it started raining. So all Leila Ma'arta. So what did he do? He went into a cave to avoid the rain. Yeah? Okay? Min Yativ Gam v'damachle v'avad shkia b'shinte shavin shnin adachar beit muktisha v'itvnei zman tinyanat. And while he's there, he fell asleep, and he slept for 70 years. And in the meantime, the Beit HaMikdash got destroyed and was rebuilt. Right? He slept for the entire galut between Bayit Rishon and Bayit Sheni. L'sov shavin shnin, after 70 years, itar min shinte, he woke up. Nifakle min ma'arta v'chamei alma mechalaf, he came out of the cave, and he saw the world changed. Zoved aved kramin avidin zaitin, zoved aved zaitin aved zaro, right? Places that used to be grapes were now grew olives, right? Meaning they totally changed the agriculture, etc. Shalei lemedinta. So he asked someone, Amar lo makala ba'alma. He said, what's going on? Right? What's new in the world? Amrun lein v'letad yada makala ba'alma. He said, what? You don't know what's going on? Amar lo, no. I have no idea. Amrun lei manat, they said, who are you? Choni HaMe'agel, I'm Choni. Amrun lei, really? Shemanu dave ayala azarav amin minhara. We heard that whenever Choni HaMe'agel would go into the Beit HaMikdash, it would light up. All, so he went into the Beit HaMikdash, and what happened? V'anharat, it lit up. V'kara al garmei. So he said about himself, "Beshuv Hashem etziyah, Shivat Zion, Hayinu kechomim."
What's the explanation for this story of what is happening?
1 second. And he said the Pasuk in Shir HaMaalot that we were like dreamers when we came back from Galut, right? Beshuvah, right? That's the Yerushalmis, okay? Bavlis. I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Kol Yom HaShod HaTzadik HaMitzdar HaMikrazeh. All of his life, Choni HaMagel was trying to understand this Pasuk. Shir HaMaalot Beshuvah Hashem et Shivat Zion Ayinu K'chomim. And he used to say, Amr, Mi'ika Denayim Shivin Shin B'chalma. Can anyone really sleep for 70 years and dream? Oh, I don't understand the Pasuk. So Yom Vachad, so what happened? He was walking. He saw someone planting carob tree. He said, how many years does it take for it to bear fruit? 70 years. Do you think you're going to live for 70 years? You're already an old man. When I was born, my family had already planted carobs for me. I benefited from what my ancestors did, and now I'm planting it for my grandchildren. Yativ. So he sat down, Kokarach Rift, and he had lunch. Atale Shinta and fell asleep. Nim. Ahadrele Mishuntai, Ichse Mayana. Vinim Shivin Shini. Fell asleep, he got covered, and woke up 70 years later. Kikam Chazelu Gavra Dave Kamiklet Minayu. When he woke up, he saw someone cutting down the carobs. Amarle Atu Dishatalte, were you the one who planted this tree? Amarle Barbreana, I'm his grandson. Amarle Shmamina, deny me Shivan Shin. I slept for 70 years. Chaza Lechamre Ityalda Le Ramche Ramche. So he looks around, right, for his donkey, and it turns out his donkey had kids and grandchildren, and you know, it's been a long time. Azalavete, he went to his house. Amr lehu breid choni amagel mikayim. He said, "Is the son of choni amagel alive?" Amr le breilat da bar breid. He said, "No, his son's dead, but his grandson's alive." Amr le ani choni amagel. He said, "I am choni." Lohem inhu. They didn't believe him. Azul beit hamedrash. He went to the base medrash. Shaminu le rabban de kamri, and they said, "Nihir in shmeitzin kibishnei choni amagel." This Torah is as bright and clear as it was in the days of Choni HaMagel, the Chevi Ayle Beit Midrasha, Kol Kushit, Avigur Rabbanim Mafarik Lehu, that any question any rabbi would ever have, Choni would answer it. Amr Lehu, Ananihu, and he said, it's me! Me! That's me! V'lo him inhu, they didn't believe him. V'lo Avle Yikra Kedavayle, they didn't respect him properly. Chalish Daite, he got depressed. Boy Rachime, he davened umate, and he died. And Hainu Damrienshi, O Chavruto Mituta. And this is what people say, either friendship or death. Okay? Now, there's a lot we could do with these stories, but let's highlight some of the salient differences that point to methodological distinctions between Bava and Drama. So first of all, yes. The drama of the one in the Yerushalmi is it's about Eretz Yisrael. He's in Eretz Yisrael, he sleeps through the Galut, and he goes to the Beit HaMikdash. That's the drama. Right? What does the Bavli do to all that imagery? There's no Beit HaMikdash. What is there? There's a Beit Midrash. And there's carob trees and stuff like that. But like the place he goes into, well, I'll highlight how the parallel. You're right, it has that. But what's the parallel to the Beit HaMikdash in the Bavli? The Beit HaMidrash. How do I know? Exactly. Because in both of them, Choni Ma'agel is brings light. In the Yerushalmi, how does he bring light?
By
light. He walks in and there's light, you know, like light. He turns on the lights. He brings light. In the Bavli, how does he bring light? He clarifies Torah and makes the Torah clear as if I shine the light on it. Right? It becomes all metaphorical, base medrash style. Right? Right? So she said, when you look at the story, the first thing that jumps out at you is Yerushalmi, the story is about an experience in Eretz Yisrael. Churban and the rebuilding. In the Bavli, it becomes a story about the Beis Medrash, right? Now, there are other differences, I think, that come out.
The second one, he was wondering beforehand.
Very good. I think a big difference is also, right, and this touches on things we've seen already, the Bavli, this is Lumdus. How did it start? He was sitting in the Beis Medrash one day, and he said, "Shir Hamalot B'Shuv Hashem Et Shivat Zion Ayinu K'chomim." What does it mean for somebody to sleep for 7 years as if he's dreaming. I don't understand. Oh, it's such a kasha. I don't understand the pasuk in Tehillim. So God says, I'll make you Rip Van Winkle, and you'll understand the pasuk, right? Right? Like this whole drama happens. Why? So that he could understand a drusha in the Beis Medrash.
And that's why it ends with,
right?
And that's why it ends with the Torah being clear for him because he understands.
Right, right. That's like the whole drama. And he was showing me, he wasn't wondering, what is the point of this? It's telling you. No. What's the role of the pasuk? Remember, the pasuk is central in both of them. In the Yerushalmi, he's wondering the pasuk, the whole lamdus, right? What, right? And it's a parable. It's like, oh, how could you do it? It's like, oh, you literally could sleep for 7 years. What's the point here? In the Yerushalmi, what's the point of the pasuk? No, it's exactly what it means. There's no hidden meaning. What's the pasuk actually about?
No.
What? Let me ask you. Forget the Gemara. What is when the pasuk is actually Shir HaMalot B'Shuv Hashem V'Shivat Zion Hayinu Kechomim? When God brought us back from Galut, we were like dreamers. What is it about? Coming back after the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. In the Yerushalmi, what is it about? Coming back after the Beit HaMikdash, right? After the Chorban, he just happened to sleep through it, right? Meaning the pasuk is saying, look, here's one person who literally slept through it and got to go back to the Beit HaMikdash. That's the point of the story. And therefore he woke up and went into the second Beit HaMikdash, right? It's actually about that. It's not like a drusha on it. It's saying, hey, that guy actually experienced it, right? As opposed to in the Bavli, oh, I was wondering what the pasuk means, and God makes me Rip Van Winkles, and I can understand what the pasuk would mean, right? So again, right, you see a lot of the differences we've talked about between Bavli and the Yerushalmi. In the Bavli, in the Yerushalmi, it's about Eretz Yisrael, it's about the Mikdash. The pasuk is there to frame an actual experience, not a vort in the Beis Medrash. And therefore, are there any explicit lessons that are taught? No, it's a great man who slept through and didn't have to experience the Galut. Yalla! Right? And did they believe him?
Yeah.
Yes, they believed him. Why?
Because
before he lit up the Beit, right? The Beit HaMikdash. Now he does, right? Life hasn't changed. In the Bavli, this becomes, the whole story becomes a drasha, right? I was wondering what the pasuk meant, and I had to sleep in order to understand the lesson. Plus, a whole bunch of lessons thrown in along the way, like, you don't just do things for yourself, you do it for your grandchildren, and we have responsibilities across generations, right? And even the end of it, right? He goes in the Beis Medrash, he's, right? How does he want to show that who he is? Goes in the Beis Medrash to teach them Torah, and they don't believe him. And even, it's a tragic scene. Does it end with tragedy? No! It ends... No, it ends with other people learning a lesson from the fact that he died a tragic death. Which is, aha, he died in the Beis Medrash because he doesn't have a chev from the Beis Medrash, and from here people see, oh, chavruta umituta, that either friendship or death. Right? Meaning, they can't even let him rest in peace. It's he dies, and the Bavli says, I just gotta stick in one more point. By the way, this teaches you about how important friendship is, specifically, probably in the context of the Beit Midrash. Right? What?
How am I still alive?
What?
Because you don't have a chavrusa.
Only one of these stories could happen now.
So well, so again, with the Rabbi Menarambam, as we've noted, right, there can be a core historical story, and then you tell it in whatever way you want, right? That's what the Rabbi Menarambam argues about a lot of Agadato, right? So what the core is, I don't know, right? But you see a lot of these differences, right, in terms of real time versus past, didactic versus experience, right? The centrality of Eretz Yisrael versus the centrality of the Beit Midrash, right? They very much come up in these stories where clearly, again, and this I'll end because Ravashi's going to start, that in the Yerushalmi, the story is about a person who experienced Korban, or didn't experience Korban because he slept through it, so he experienced the Beit HaMikdash. How does he experience it, and how does he not experience the Korban everyone else does, right? And there's none of this tragedy because...
In the Yerushalmi, it says that he lived near the Korban, so it wasn't the story during the flood.
Correct, but he slept through it.
No,
he fell asleep right before. Samuch, right before. Samuch in time.
Oh.
Like, it's right before and he just sleeps through it. Right? Because what do they tell him? The Beit HaMikdash has been destroyed and rebuilt since you went to sleep. Right? Like, I slept through it. Right? It's about being impressed with this man who just slept through it and his experience in Eretz Yisrael and the Beit HaMikdash. And in the Bavli, it's about him coming up with a pshat and a pasuk. Right? And all the drama takes place in the Beit Midrash. Right? And even his death, which is tragic, we don't leave it that way. We leave it with a lesson. Right? And you see, and this is what she notes, that it's not just the Bavli and the Yerushalmi happen to tell stories differently. It seems to be the Bavli and the Yerushalmi have different methodologies in terms of what they're trying to get across and how they tell stories. Okay?